Well, on a beautiful day across most of Wisconsin, I think nothing better that we could talk about than fishing and trout fishing and getting out along our Wisconsin trout streams, of which we have many, many hundreds of miles. I bet you Todd Hansen and Steve Morton probably know exactly how many. Todd Hansen is one of our guests, Steve Morton the other. Todd's of Madison, the editor of Wisconsin Trout, secretary of Wisconsin Trout Unlimited. Steve Morton, professor emeritus of planning and environmental studies at the UW-Madison, former volunteer national chair of Trout Unlimited, co-author of the UW Press book Exploring Wisconsin Trout Streams. So they know a whole lot about trout fishing, and also a lot about our trout streams and the water in those streams and the quality of the water in those streams. So I hope you'll join in if you have questions in any of those areas. Please feel free to join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is talk@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. And already some callers online. Todd Hansen, welcome.
Hey, thank you, Larry.
Thanks a lot for being with us. Steve Morton, great to have you back.
Great to be here, although it's a nice day to be trout fishing, Larry.
It would be a great day. The trout fishing is already starting to pick up a little bit across Wisconsin.
It is. It's just about that time when the bugs start to hatch and dry fly fishing happens, and all kinds of people who have been hiding away during the winter are getting their trout gear out and ready to go out and do it.
Well, this is Trout Unlimited's 50th anniversary year, Todd. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that. It's a pretty big deal.
It is. We have been around for 50 years. The organization started in Michigan. Oh. And how many members do we have out of the organization as a whole? Do you have that in your notes, sir?
There's 140,000 members now.
And we've got 4,200 here in the state. They're in 21 chapters. Every county in the state is placed in one chapter or another. And, you know, it's really a nice organization. A lot of conservation organizations talk a good game, but one of the cool things about TU is these guys just love putting on their waders and jumping into a stream on a Saturday and lifting rocks and jetting posts and building trout habitat that's going to be there for 50, 75, 100 years. Yeah. That is really neat. At the end of the day, you've done something positive, and everybody benefits from it. It's just a neat thing.
Steve, what do you got to add there?
I think it's interesting to look back at the beginnings of Trout Unlimited, Larry. A collection of folks got together in Michigan. Kind of an interesting bunch of people, some of the real elites from the business community, the chairman of American Motors and some other prominent folks, some scientists, outdoor writers, conservationists, and they were very unhappy with the state of fisheries management in Michigan. Michigan was pretty much relying for their trout fishing on stocked fisheries, produce the fish in a hatchery, drive them up to the stream, and dump them in. And it was very clear from scientific work done at the University of Michigan that 75% of these fish were dead within 3 or 4 months at best, and only a couple percent carried over. So it was kind of inefficient. And it had a tendency, when you had kind of factory fish production, to not pay attention to loss of habitat, to have water quality degradation problems. And so these people were very concerned, and 16 of them got together on the Ausable River. And that was the founding of Trout Unlimited, and it began growing like wildfire. Soon they had 30-odd chapters in Michigan, and then people from New York and Pennsylvania, and then Wisconsin inquiring about membership. And when we came into being as a state council here in 1970, 40 years ago, there were already 4 chapters established in the state. And doing the kind of work that Todd described, stream projects and stream works, although early on, a lot of the rock rolling and so forth was kind of localized and somewhat cosmetic on occasion, but it built sweat equity in the streams. Sure. People really cared about the streams. But from the start, you go back and look at the organic documents of Trout Unlimited in Wisconsin, and people like Ray White, a very famous fisheries biologist who was from the Madison area, presented a very aggressive advocacy agenda to deal with protection of Wisconsin waters. And the general theory was that a guy named Art Newman over in Michigan had been the first executive director who coined the phrase, if you take care of the fish, the fishing will take care of itself. And so TU began focusing really on habitat work, on land use, on protecting riparian zones, dealing with water quality problems, dams that stop fish passage, and all those kind of things. And the thing that undergirded Trout Unlimited right from the beginning is a commitment to good science. And today we were saying there's 140,000 grassroots members, but there's a staff of about 150 economists, biologists spread across the country, one of the best scientific corps that nonprofits have in the United States.
Yeah. And we have callers online who want to visit with you. But just to go back to an earlier comment you made, hatchery trout and so on. There's still hatchery trout out there, but we've definitely improved across the country, I believe, the native populations.
Very much so. Wisconsin's been a national leader in using hatcheries to take wild fish, bring them back, breed them, spawn them there, and then take these wild fish adapted to our streams back out into the streams. And so we've really been expanding the number of streams where you have a naturally sustaining trout population. We gain every year in this regard. There's still a justification for stocking. Certainly the Great Lakes fishery, to the largest extent, is supported by a huge stocking program, but it's a multi-billion dollar tourism industry as well. And stocking in some lakes and in some streams that provide fishing opportunities, but they may be limited seasonally. So there's a reason for it, but not willy-nilly stocking. And we found out that the wild fish, through evolution, have adapted over time and do very well under the stresses of their environment. And the hatchery fish, who are used to eating Purina trout chow, don't fare as well.
Well, Bob in Blue Mounds has been waiting quite a while here, so I want to get Bob on. Bob, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello, Larry, and welcome, Todd and Steve.
Thank you.
One of the things I've always been taught and I've read about was that along the stream banks, it was necessary to keep shade over the streams in order to keep the water cool. And there's a trout stream just outside of Barneveld that runs off of Birch Lake there. And they went through in about 2.5 miles, if you're walking it, they cut every tree down along the bank. And I was wondering what the reason for that is.
Yep. It's an interesting issue, actually. If you went back 100 years in Wisconsin, a lot of what you see now where there's tag alder and all kinds of box elder and stuff along the streams was really prairie at that point in time. And these things shifted as time went by. And the idea was that shade is very important for both fish habitat and providing a cool cover, cool water and cover for the fish. But many of these streams are fed by groundwater, and they come in at a temperature between 50 and 53 or 4 degrees. They're cool enough in the summer to stay cool. And the idea of opening up these streams was to recreate that prairie environment and stimulate photosynthesis and bug growth and, in turn, trout growth. Now, they've done this not just on Trout Creek, which flows out of Birch Lake and Barneveld, but you can go to streams all over the state and see what it seems to be excessive cutting of vegetation and big trees all along the streams. There's nothing selective about it in some cases. So we're in the middle of running a big experiment right now as to whether or not opening up these streams will produce the result that was hoped for.
Hmm. Interesting. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Dave in Augusta, we turn to you next. Hi, Dave.
Hi, good morning. Let me tell you, there's no greater thrill and slipping on a pair of waders at 5 in the morning and sneaking up to your favorite trout stream and catching a trout on a fly that you've made. That is, and experiencing the wildlife that you could see, not only birds, but ducks and geese and occasional deer. It's just a great, great thrill, especially when you dip your hands in the water to net the fish and the water is ice cold. I hope that that the trout streams are around Wisconsin for a long, long time. I've got a question on two streams in particular. One is called Big Spring Creek in Adams County. It's the area that Perrier wanted to do some tapping of the water a number of years ago. That stream has undergone a lot of changes. I was wondering if they restored that stream back to what it was at one point in time.
Okay. Let's turn to Todd for that. Todd?
I haven't heard about any big improvements on Big Spring. Have you, Steve?
They had done some habitat work up there, but when Perrier finally pulled out of their water withdrawal plans, and that came after their original proposal to tap water for Perrier in the headwaters of the McCann, which brought the trout fishing community out in large numbers. They may have done a little bit of work up there, and I know some habitat work had been done earlier, but Big Spring has not been completely restored to my knowledge.
It's interesting that this time right now is 10 years since Perrier decided to give up on the McCann Springs water bottling idea.
Yeah.
Time flies.
It's also interesting. Incidentally, when you talk about great thrills, I certainly agree with you, but you can even have a bigger thrill when you get there at 5 in the morning with your waders on and step into that icy water and discover your waders leak.
Yes. That's happened to me. That's happened.
I've never done that. Yeah, that's for sure. Thank you, guys.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. We'd love to hear from you. And as long as we're talking about streams, Todd, you have a great book called Improved Trout Waters of Wisconsin, and maybe you could talk about that a little bit.
Well, the book came out a couple years ago, and the special niche that it fills is just compiling where in the state habitat work has been conducted in, let's say, roughly the last 50 years. It seems that a lot of people locally know where work has been done. If you live in the Madison area, you might have heard about work being done on Gordon Creek and different projects on Black Earth Creek.
Mm-hmm.
But you get a couple counties away, and you don't know what's going on locally. And so a book like this fills that niche. It just shows you where the habitat work has been done. And of course, that's nice for whenever these habitat projects take place, you know, they often come hand in hand after a year or two with more fish to catch.
Yeah.
30-40% increase in fish, that kind of thing.
Sort of interesting, Larry, to look at the evolution of how these projects have been done. The original focus was, as Todd was indicating, some small habitat improvement, rock rolling, stream bank protection. But we had a national program called Embrace a Stream, which provided some money, perhaps to 25 projects or so around the country each year, maybe $300,000 of spending. And National Trout Unlimited thought for years that was their stream restoration program. What they didn't take account of is the 400 chapters and all the work they were doing. And so we use the Embrace a Stream program to set up some norms, to get it on a watershed basis, to make sure there was good science underneath it, to make sure that the Trout Unlimited membership was fully engaged in it. And that program has been the vanguard of really improving the caliber and the long-term benefits derived from our stream project work, not only in Wisconsin, but all around the country.
Yeah, absolutely. Our guests today, Todd Hansen and Steve Bourne, as we talk with them about trout fishing and improving trout waters here in Wisconsin. Again, you can join us at 800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Lots of callers online, so we'll go back to our phones and Joe in Platteville up next. Joe, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking me.
Sure. What can we do for you?
I've got a question pertaining to the streams, and I just picked this up, and so I'm not sure you're the person to ask about this, but I know in Wisconsin here, if we want to put a little pond or something in any type of creek or stream, it seems like the DNR is just definitely against that, and I've heard stories that, you know, it's going to change the water temperature and different things. That's kind of correct, isn't it? They don't want to pond up any of this water to speak of?
Well, it's true. These are public waters, and DNR represents the state in making sure that there's no injury to those public waters. Consequently, there are permits that are required for altering these streams, and if you wanted to dig a pond within 500 feet of a trout stream, there'd have to be an assessment made of what the impacts are. It turns out that these small dams, of which we've got 3,500 or so in the state, going back to the old grist mill age in the 1800s. Many of these were built on trout streams, and they can be real killers for not just the fish, but for other parts of the biotic system. They warm the water, so it's not just a question of thermal warming, but it's a change of chemistry. They stop the movement of fish, and fish have different needs at different parts in their life cycle. So DNR represents the state and the sports people in ensuring that we don't do anything detrimental to those surface waters. You can still get a permit. There's a review process for doing it, and that provides the public oversight. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah.
No, I guess I got one more comment pertaining to that, and it seems like Wisconsin's very deathly on any ponds, you know, ponding up any of this water. But as far as me and my history lessons go, when the white man came over here, they came over here, and one of the biggest things they did is they did beaver trapping, and they had beaver pelts that they sent all over to Europe. And so the entire Midwest was covered with beavers, and we all know what beavers do. They dam up the rivers and creeks and streams. And now somebody in the DNR has determined that we can't have any dams or any of that sort of stuff in any of these creeks, and I think it must be going against the natural flow of the way the state actually was made and designed. And also, that would do a tremendous amount for holding back all this water that rushes down and goes out and floods the Mississippi and all the other, the Kickapoo and all the other things.
Well, you speak like a beaver. And it is interesting, if you're out in the western part of the United States, beaver ponds play a very important part in water conservation. Their storage at all their little dams on the small tributaries is an important part of sustaining flows in their river systems. We generally, around most of the state, have adequate flows, and so the storage issue isn't so important. And in fact, there is a program in the state of Wisconsin that provides for removing beavers from a lot of our trout streams because of the deleterious effects they have. But the point is, you can still apply for a pond, a small dam. They're being built in different places, farm ponds, local fisheries, that kind of thing. Communities are looking at their old dams that have silted in, have the option of reclaiming the dam, rehabilitating the ponds behind them. But it's on a case-by-case basis, and so one doesn't want to generalize on these things.
Thanks, Joe, for calling. Appreciate your call. Mike in Larrabee is up next. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Larrabee.
Thanks for calling.
Guys.
Yeah, what's on your mind?
I've got a question about river rehab. I live on the West Wind River in northern Manitowoc County. And north of us, we have a lot of liquid manure spreading, ponch manure from the packing plants, and it's a lot of runoff. The river, after it resides in the spring, it just stinks so bad down there. How could a person be directed towards starting a river cleanup?
Yeah. Well, you've raised a huge issue. I mean, agriculture is one of the three basic legs of our economy in this state. And yet, agriculture also causes a lot of our problems. The industry has tried to deal with a lot of them around the state, but polluted runoff is still the number one water quality problem in the state. And of course, when you've got an agricultural industry under stress, it's hard without the cost-sharing measures to get farmers to put in place the practices that would reduce that. One thing you could do in terms of moving forward, and really these are the kinds of things, because so much of the acreage in our watersheds is in agriculture, is you have to find ways to work with the farming community. You could look at forming a river association. You can get help on that if you go to a website for River Alliance of Wisconsin. There's all kinds of guidelines on how local groups can start that are friends of XYZ River, caretakers of ABC Stream, that kind of thing. You could also talk to your local DNR fish manager. He would have some guidance on public groups that might be in existence now, including land conservancies. And if it's a trout stream, you could certainly go to the TU website and find a chapter in your area and look at the issues. This is a very vexing problem for us in the state right now, because these large operations, which represent about 11% of the livestock in the state, are under fairly intense regulation. There are some concerns in the conservation community about enforcement, but at least they have the deep pockets to put in the requisite pollution abatement equipment. On the other hand, there's 11 million cows roaming around the state that are not under any kind of regulation in smaller farming operations. And if you don't have the land base to use the manure as the resource that it is and spread it, it winds up doing just the kind of thing you described up on the Twin.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike, for calling. Appreciate your call. We have more callers online. Duke in Eau Claire has a comment or question. Hi, Duke. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. And Steve and Todd, thanks for celebrating this this big birthday. I have a question for each of you. Steve, you talked about the wooded corridors along Trout Creek, and there being some work to remove those. Isn't it true that out in the Driftless area where we have these box elder corridors and eroding banks, we've got it benefits the stream to open those up to sunlight and to get some more vegetation going in the stream that's home for all the parts of the food system for this cold water. And then Todd, what can you say about the educational sorts of things that CU is doing to teach people about healthy cold water streams in the state? I want to thank you again. I'll hang up and
listen in. Okay. All right. Steve, we'll start with you.
All right. Thanks for that question, Duke. I'm surprised you're not out trout fishing someplace today. It's true that opening up these streams, meadow streams, prairie streams, stimulates that photosynthetic process. And I think the question that could be asked is whether or not it has to be a wholesale butchering of all the vegetation there, or whether or not it could be more selective. But we're in the middle of an experiment being run across the state right now on opening up these trout streams, and we're going to see what the response is. I think one has to stop and think like Aldo Leopold's seminal essay, Thinking Like a Mountain. Trout anglers tend to worry about trout, but all of us are wired into the ecosystem as well. And what's good for trout, we also have to think about other species, about the context, the habitat. And that's one of the things that is increasingly brought into these projects. And so these large-scale streamside improvement projects, habitat restoration, opening them up to sunlight, in general, I think are going to be very helpful to our fisheries. If our streams were less reliant on groundwater and more reliant on surface water runoff and warmed up dramatically in the summer, then the issue of shading and providing trees, in many states, as you know, they're planting trees along the banks of streams to provide that shaded cover. So it works different ways in different places. But in general, we expect there to be significant benefits.
Okay. And Todd, you want to talk about the educational things that TU is doing?
Yes. A lot of the TU chapters have annual events where they invite the public in for different things. And maybe this goes along the lines of celebrating the fishing part of what we get involved with. They might teach fly tying or casting to youngsters. Coming up this May when we have this Wisconsin Outdoor Expo up in Beaver Dam. I don't know, maybe Larry, you've done programs on that. I know TU might have a couple dozen people up there teaching kids how to tie their first trout fly and giving them instruction on fly casting. That's the fishing end, but you know, on the conservation end, TU chapters get involved in that as well. One really cool program that's been going on the last 3 or 4 years is it operates right out here out of Madison. The Shabazz High School students go over to the West Fork of the Kickapoo, and their instructor is involved with Trout Unlimited to do what they call a Project Green Teen program. The students get credit for this. I'm not sure in exactly which area in the high school curriculum it applies, but they go over there. They get involved in an actual stream restoration project, what they're also doing besides the project is to see the results of some past ones. So they might go into an area that has sand in the bottom of the stream and try to capture some insects. No luck. No insects like sand. But if you improve the stream, get the water moving a little bit faster and expose some gravel, then if the kids look for insects there, success. You know, lots of insects. And, you know, this clicks, you know, as to why the habitat work is being done in the first place. So, you'll find TU chapters doing big things like this Shabazz project, but also little things where, you know, at an event, they might have some insects that were captured, and they're explaining, you know, about how they function to keep trout healthy and what we can do to improve the stream so that there are more of those insects there for the fish.
It's really fascinating. Nobody joins Trout Unlimited or any other organization to become the treasurer of the local chapter and prepare an annual budget and to do all the business stuff that you have to do. Trout Unlimited is first and foremost a conservation organization. But people come into it because they're interested in learning to fly tie flies, learn how to fish. And as time goes by, they're inculcated with the conservation ethic because they see how all these parts are connected together. And so we grow conservationists in the organization. They just happen to love trout angling.
We have an email from a couple of emails, one from Brian, who wonders, in Milwaukee he is, he wonders if you've noticed fewer trout in the Wolf River over the past 5 to 10 years. If so, could you speculate as to why?
Water quality. The Wolf is it's kind of sad. The Wolf, that famed trout river, is in trouble. It's a wide river because of things that have been done to it over the years. Logging. I grew up in New London, where a lot of those logs ended up at the Hatton Lumber Mill, and they came from up north all the way down from that Wolf in its upper reaches. All that lumbering widened the river. Wide river means shallow. Sunlight warms it up quicker. You know, it's going to be a tough river to rehab. It's much more known for warmer water bass fishing now than for trout. But there are some things going on. I'll just mention one. There are some tributaries to the Wolf that provide cold water. The Trout Unlimited chapters up in that area, the Wolf River chapter and others, you know, they're looking at some of those and making sure that water stays cold coming into the Wolf. Big project. What was that stream that?
Well, the Hunting is one of the main influence streams. The Wolf has always been right at the critical edge of temperature. And trout have been stocked in the Wolf. Part of the good fishery was as a result of stocking, scatter planting by the TU chapter working with DNR up there. The tributaries are cold enough, as Todd says, to support not only all trout, but brook trout, which have high demands in terms of their environment. And so there's still some good fishing on the tribs, but that river has been shifting over the years. We included a big chapter in our book on the Wolf River. Lots of conservation heroes in that neck of the woods. But as there's been pumping for potato production up there and some reduction in base flow, along with perhaps some effects of some climate change, that river has kind of shifted over in the temperature regime to where it's almost more favorable in the main stem for smallmouth bass and further downstream walleye, warm water fishery. But it has wonderful hatches. The tributaries can provide some tremendous trout fishing. And the Wolf River chapter was one of the four first chapters in the state when we formed the state council. Of course, all the old leaders are now long gone in trout fishing heaven, but there's a new cast of characters that have come on to reinvigorate that chapter, as Todd indicates, and are doing some things off the main stem that will be good for local trout fishing.
Let's turn to Bob in Stevens Point next. Bob, hello to you.
Hey, good morning, guys. I want to thank you so much for this show. This is dear to my heart. And you guys are doing this, like you said, not to get rich, because you love it. So do I. Hey, what's on my mind this morning is Portage County here. We've got like 3,000 wells that irrigate agricultural fields. Each one of them takes as much water as that Perrier well that we were fighting and won. And I'm watching a lot of my favorite little trout streams in central Wisconsin are just going dry. There's no water whatsoever. There's a bill in the legislature right now to try to regulate this a little bit. We need farming, but we need trout. Is Trout Unlimited taking a position on this?
You bet they have. Both in my academic role and working with Trout Unlimited, we've been involved with improving groundwater management in the state and better protection of groundwater and the related surface waters, because that groundwater is the lifeblood, as you know, for a large sector of our trout streams. That bill, I was just down there this morning at the assembly hearings on that bill. They don't have very much time because the session ends at the end of April, and it's quite controversial. But it's clear that large-scale irrigation pumping has affected a number of the trout streams up there. The poster child is the Little Plover, which has actually gone dry. Some lakes in the area, which are seepage or groundwater-fed lakes, have also either gone dry or had levels lowered. And what's really needed here is this legislation, which will provide for tailoring the management of the aquifer and pumping in a way that doesn't curtail agricultural production, but allows it to be done in a way that doesn't harm our surface waters. And Trout Unlimited is a very strong supporter, is one of the members of the 30-group coalition supporting this legislation.
And thank you again, Bob, for calling. Ron in Sparta will turn to you next. Ron, hello. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. My comment is sort of on the fellow about the beaver dams. The cranberry growers in the state have carte blanche. They pretty much can do whatever they want. I don't know if all the taxpayers know that we subsidize and pay for all their fencing to keep all the wildlife out. They're expanding. Barely the price was up a little bit last year, so they've got all kinds of money. They're all expanding in our area, Toma, Juneau, Monroe County, Northern Monroe County, Warrens area. And they fence and build huge ponds to irrigate their systems, have basically trade land with the state. Everybody says it's to the state's advantage. Well, it's to their advantage because I used to hunt on land that now is cranberry bogs, and it's fenced in that there's no access. Used to be county land. I mean, you regulate everything else, but when they come to too big to fail, that's the same thing that's going to happen to the cranberry growers. They're all expanding. Their price is going to go in the toilet. And next year they'll be crying and we'll bail them out just like we did the big banks.
Yep. Well, you raise an interesting point. The cranberry industry, we're either number one or number two, depending upon what year you look at, in cranberry production. It's a big industry. It used to happen down around wetlands and so forth. They've now moved a lot of that production, the new production, up into the uplands. But the cranberry industry has long had an exemption from a lot of our water resource management laws, and every attempt to modify that has been beaten back. In fact, the Cranberry Growers Association in the industry is testifying against this new groundwater bill. We need the industry, and for the most part, they're not affected by groundwater legislation. A very small amount of acreage is now supplied by groundwater. It's largely surface water. But you can point to a lot of streams that have been damaged by the cranberry industry. And it's a question of making sure their operations are copacetic with good environmental stewardship.
Yeah. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, with a question or comment at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. You have a statewide program started a few months ago to create a fund for which land and easements can be purchased to give trout fishers more access.
Yes. Over the years, Trout Unlimited chapters and sometimes the statewide state council have been asked for a little bit of money to kick in to help buy a property that has some trout waters going through it. These usually have been individual requests, and often what happens is the DNR would like to buy a property. They can only pay the assessed value of it, and sometimes the landowner says, well, geez, I'd like, you know, $10,000, $20,000 more for this than the assessed value. I can't sell it to you. So we've had DNR folks and others come to TU chapters and say, hey, can you kick in toward this, and then we can buy this property. So what the state council did a year ago is say, hey, let's develop a fund so that we can meet some of these requests in a more efficient manner, build up some money, and let the DNR, let the land trust community know that this money is available so that if these situations come up and they need to move quickly or at least get a commitment for money, okay, we've got some. And we'll see how that works. I think it will be great because increasingly we're finding different groups coming together, and they are pulling a little bit of money from here, a little bit of money from there to make things happen. And as the word gets out that we have this available for properties that, again, contain have some trout water running through them, we'll get a lot of takers.
It's a much bigger question than that, Larry. What you see in the stream is really nothing more than an assay of what's happening on the land. And so taking care of the land is critical to protecting trout streams. And Trout Unlimited nationally has a pioneering program that they're using to use land conservation and buying easements and so forth as part of the program. But as Todd indicated, working through a huge network of land trusts all over the country and in Wisconsin to let them use their capabilities where we share objectives to protect the land and thereby protect the cold water resources therein.
I want to, we're running out of time here a little bit, but Trout Unlimited, if people are interested in joining or becoming involved in Trout Unlimited, how do they do that, Todd?
Well, we've got a nice chapter website. People can go to www.wisconsintu.org. Okay. There they can find links to different chapters that have their own individual websites, and there are lots of contact information and information about what we do, archived newsletters going back more than 10 years, this kind of thing.
All right, and that's, again, that website is?
www.wisconsintu.org.
And it's a fun group of people for the most part.
That's right.
It's a changing group of people, too. More women are coming into the sport. We're trying to make sure that everybody isn't 55 or 60 years old and male. And so we're really trying to recruit kids, and there's all kinds of new anglers. If you look at some of the people who are trout and salmon fishing along the Lake Michigan shorefront, you see every hue and color. It's starting to look like America.
Yeah.
And so unless you've got a bunch of anglers that care about the resource is in trouble, and that's what Trout Unlimited is trying to do with our conservation mission.
Well, guys, thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it. We'll look forward to another visit. Thank you, both.
Yeah, thank you.
Todd Hanson of Madison, editor of Wisconsin Trout, secretary of Wisconsin Trout Unlimited, Steve Bourne, former volunteer national chair of Trout Unlimited, and is co-author of the UW Press book, Exploring Wisconsin Trout Streams. Great pleasure to have them with us, and I'm sure we'll talk with them again about trout fishing and improving our trout waters. But we're going to turn our attention from kind of the water and under the water to what's kind of on top and flying around as we talk about protecting Wisconsin birds in Costa Rica. That coming up next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.